Welcome to the second season of Alternative Parenting Podcast, where we learn how to guide our kids to find their own path while supporting them in cultivating traits that will empower them to live a life of fulfillment, meaning, and satisfaction. I'm your host, Efrat Amira. Welcome back. In the world that we live today, I think that one of the important things we need to nurture in our kids is resilience. The future is very uncertain. We really don't know where our society is going to go. We really don't know how things are going to look globally. And there may be big challenges ahead of them. But we can help them practice by nurturing resilience in our day-to-day life while dealing with the ordinary things. Any challenging situation or any stressful situation that they have is an opportunity to learn resilience. And we as parents have the chance to guide them. That is why I've created a free guide for you that is called Raising Resilient Kids. Grab it for free at alternative-parenting.ck.page/resilience. I'll also link that in the show notes. In today's episode, I interview Ida Mason. Ida is a trauma-informed somatic and psychedelic practitioner. She helps people who are suffering from depression, anxiety, and overwhelm, or are dealing with difficult feelings and relationship issues, creative blocks, life transitions, and unresolved grief, stress, and trauma. She is trained in multiple trauma healing modalities and is currently pursuing postgraduate clinical education. She also has extensive experience and training in using psychedelics for healing and spiritual growth, where she brings 25 plus years of spiritual practices into her work, guided through formal yoga, mindfulness, and meditation training. I met Ida when I was seeking a somatic experiencing practitioner for myself. I came across the work of somatic experiencing in 2021 when I was pursuing my coaching education. I was really intrigued by this world and soon started to cultivate different practices in my day-to-day life and with the kids that truly changed my whole experience. I have gone from being very disconnected to my body, not expressing my needs, not knowing how to express my anger, to learning to feel safe when setting boundaries, showing aggression, and understanding what I need on a very deep level. As part of my journey, I met Ida, and we have been working together as she helps me now step into the next step of starting my own business, sharing my voice with the world, and still being very present with my kids. Somatic experiencing is truly the most fundamental practice I have incorporated in my life. I learned that while doing very subtle practices, I can transform my whole life experience. In this episode, Ida shares what somatic experiencing is, what resilience means, how we can cultivate a bigger capacity to endure stressful situations, how we can nurture resilience in our kids, and what to do with anger and how to express aggression in a healthy way. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. And now on to the episode. Welcome, Ida. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. I want you to start with telling us a little bit about yourself and about what you do.
Yeah, thank you, Efra. Thank you so much for having me. I am a somatic and psychedelic practitioner, and I specialized in helping people to heal from stress and trauma. I'm in private practice. I have an office on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And then I also work with people nationwide. Maybe you can hear I have a little bit of an accent. I'm Bosnian by birth. I am also a survivor of the war in Bosnia. So you can, as you can imagine, I escaped from Bosnia during the first winter of the Bosnia War, in my early 20s, and I struggled with pretty significant symptoms of PTSD multiple times in my life. And I have tried all kinds of modalities, different types of therapy, and alternative approaches, but nothing really helped me integrate and work through and integrate the residue of some difficult traumatic experiences than somatic experiencing. That is, I because of the impact that it had on my own health, mental health, emotional health, and well-being, I decided to put myself through school and complete somatic experiencing training. It's a 3-year training. And then I also trained in multiple other somatic modalities because I believe that our bodies have their own innate healing intelligence, and our modern lifestyle is often designed in such a way that we de-emphasized our connection to the body and put so much emphasis on our linear mind thinking processes. And the healing, at least for me, was when I really was able to connect with and embrace the wisdom of my body. And for all of us who have significant traumatic imprints, such as shock trauma or PTSD or developmental trauma, the body is not necessarily the safest place because it carries the residue of some difficult experiences. So why would we be connecting to our bodies when we don't always want to feel what is inside? So my process was really embracing, reconnecting to the body, finding the way back to what I feel it's my source, and that back to that innate healing intelligence that is available to all of us.
So, can you tell us a little bit what somatic experiencing actually is? And how do we start? Like, what are the first steps that we do to reconnect to our body?
Yes. So somatic experiencing is a modality that is developed by Dr. Peter Levine. He was a medical biophysicist, and he came up with or started developing this model in the late 70s. And then over the course of years, his teaching was very well received, not only here in the United States and in Canada, in North America, but throughout the entire world. We have practitioners in 44 countries in the world, huge presence in South America, Brazil, and other countries in South America. I'm mentioning Brazil because the center for the Center of Association for South America is there. We have a huge presence in Europe also, and we just started expanding our presence in Africa specifically. We are now in South Africa, and we want to and also Japan and Southeast Asia and China, Singapore, South Korea. And we also are actively working on expanding our presence in the areas that need this type of help and support, especially the Middle East and then Eastern Europe, Ukraine, and the surrounding countries. So the somatic experiencing is, again, a modality. We work in a very specific way with implicit memories that are stored in the body, and then with we have somatically based interventions and tools that help us access that body intelligence, what I was talking about. And I don't know how, if you want me to be more technical and explain some technical details, or shall I stay and talk more, just provide more for your audience? Is it better to perhaps focus on some practical applications of this model?
So I want you to start with maybe telling us, how do these memories get into our bodies in the first place? Maybe.
Right. Yeah. So basically, when we experience an overwhelming event, we use the word trauma as an umbrella term for different types of circumstances, to describe different types of circumstances, events, and situations, that any event that is overwhelming to our nervous system, that really challenges our capacity to stay resilient. We will be talking more about resilience later, and present. And when I'm talking, so traumatic events, how we work in this modality can be anything. For some people, medical trauma can be having a complicated and difficult dental procedure can be very traumatic. Going under anesthesia can be very, very traumatic. Fortunately, now we see that healthcare practitioners are slowly awakening to the need to introduce trauma-informed practices in their care. But what I have heard from my clients is that these experiences, and clinical studies show that these experiences, can be highly difficult and dysregulating for the body to process. Someone, for example, wakes up under anesthesia. We talk about these experiences as near-death experiences. Mm-hmm. Any instances when our body is in situations, if we are drowning or if we are suddenly losing capacity to access our breath, or if we faint, if we pass out, these are all can be very challenging experiences for the body. And of course, experiencing what we call classical trauma, emotional abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, being in war zones, experiencing domestic violence, even just hearing, can be highly traumatic. Being imprisoned, being kidnapped, These are very traumatic events. And then also witnessing natural disasters, tsunamis, hurricanes, being in flood zones, all of that, losing home because of tornadoes. These are all very, very challenging experiences, as again, they challenge our capacity to stay present and resilient. And being in high-speed traffic accidents, sometimes for some of us, just having a bad breakup can be very traumatic. Or falling from the bike and not being able to orient easily, slipping on ice. These are all experiences that can leave the residue of stress and trauma in the body.
Mm. So you talked about what is called like the big T traumas, right? And also there are the little T traumas, which are more of the everyday, ordinary things that everyone goes through, right? And you also mentioned a few times the word resilience in this. And I was wondering how you see resilience in this aspect of trauma and the body.
Yes. So yeah, the word resilience comes from the Latin word. Let me know if I can pronounce this well. Resilire or resilire. And it means to jump back or to recoil. So I am sure that we have all our own version what resilience means. But in this body of work, we talk about resilience as the ability to regulate, settle, and recover from stressful or traumatic experiences, not to get stuck in the trauma cycle. And as I mentioned, with everyday, with the challenges of our everyday life, especially after the COVID pandemic, which was very hard for a lot of us, and I know especially for your audiences, for parents, the COVID pandemic presented so many challenges, and being resilient means just to be able to adapt, adjust, recover quickly. For resilience, right? We are talking about physical resilience. That's one aspect of our resilience. How quickly we are able to recover from some health scare conditions, or when we are under stress, our immune system will be compromised. It will be impacted because when we have stress hormones running in our bloodstream and physiology, that means that automatically the endocrine system will have to adjust, the hypothalamus pituitary axis will focus on the stress hormones, will really diminish the resilience and impair the function of our immune system. Again, very, very apropos to this, even for the post-COVID era. Then we are talking about emotional resilience. It is so important for our well-being and emotional health that it is inevitable that we will have a fight or disagreement or some type of conflict with our loved ones, our partners, our spouses, our children. And ideally, we want in these situations, and we will talk about some practical applications down the line, to, if we get triggered, to be really, to try to notice that we are being triggered, and then try to kind of reorient. We will talk about practices later. Then also relational resilience, right? All relationships, that is very close to what we are talking about here, emotional resilience, relational resilience. All relationships are bound to have some challenges and conflicts. And then we have environmental effects, right? Living in the world when there are so many pesticides, where our immune systems may be compromised, compromised, And how do we build the resilience and wellness practices to be more, to quickly adapt and to recover from these challenges? So, and then also collectively, we have a lot of our countries going through some challenging situations. A lot of us noticing that our country is highly polarized, that alone presents is a stressor for everyone's nervous system, the type of news we may or may not read. And then these global conflicts, that these are all stressors. We are talking about proximal stressors that are very close to us, work stressors, relational stressors, stressors in the family, and then also what is in the collective. Sorry, I kind of started from one theme and started, then ended up completely in a different way. I hope that's okay.
No, I think it's all very connected. And I was wondering why, because we're talking about things that happen every day to every person, right? It's like reading the news and getting a stress response, or having a conflict in work and having a conflict with your spouse, or, you know, a conflict with your child, or just someone, you know, with something traumatic can be a very loud noise that you're hearing, right? And it just gets you out of your center for a second. So why do some people have more capacity to endure these difficult, like these day-to-day situations? And for some people, it doesn't even affect them so much.
Exactly, right. Because we inherently have, all of us are unique human beings, and we inherently have or carry different levels of traumatic imprints in our nervous system. We have different epigenetic imprints. Some of us may come from backgrounds where our ancestors experienced very significant transgenerational trauma that goes from four generations. Some of us may have also challenging medical conditions. Some of us may not have supportive communities or loved ones to or anyone to support us through difficult, stressful, and traumatic situations. So when we talk about resilience, would you like me to now start talking about some practical tips?
I think I would like you first to talk about resilience specifically in parenting and children's situations. So what are the type of things that challenge parents' resilience or challenge children's resilience?
Yeah. Yes. I'll start with parents.
Mm-hmm.
Profess I'm not a parent, so I may rely on your wisdom and your experience here, and welcome your suggestions and recommendations and input. But what I can say is that parenting is inherently stressful.
Right.
So that is just given. And again, especially during the COVID pandemic and in this post-COVID era, we are still adjusting to this life where there is more demand on parents and parents' nervous systems. The school may be closed, or things have dramatically shifted. So what is important, I would say, is first self-care. Finding some opportunities in everyday life to focus on self-care, even if it's just 5 minutes. And how could that look like? Mindfulness practices can be very helpful because, again, we want to increase our capacity to stay present. So triggers are inevitable. We are not seeking for perfection. Mm-hmm. We are not seeking to be living in a vacuum where we never get triggered. We have some perfect kids who never have challenges or difficulties. No, the point is to embrace our humanity, embrace our imperfections, and carve these small moments in our everyday life to increase self-care. So that can be mindfulness practices. Maybe do a 3-minute breathing exercise a couple of times per year, per day. Maybe I suggested to one of my clients who have a very demanding work, professional life, and also family life, to just add at the end, when she's brushing her teeth, just to add a 2-minute breathing practice where she can sit on the, literally on the top of her toilet, undisturbed, and practice connect noticing her breath. It doesn't even have to be some complicated yogic pranayama.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just be deep breathing in and breathing out, and literally take a phone and use the timer and just spend 2 minutes breathing and noticing the breath, because noticing our breath is one of the fastest ways to start noticing our internal states. And another tip here would be, if we want to add another layer to this simple practice, is to make sure that our out breath is even just 1 second longer than the in-breath. So if the in-breath is 2 seconds, the out-breath would be 3 seconds, because that will automatically evoke what we call the rest and digest response. So that could be a simple tool. Another tool for those who are commuting, for example,
mm-hmm.
when we get to the car, our car, just to notice how are we transitioning from one state to another. Are we automatically just searching for keys, or do we just take a second to literally feel our butt in that car seat? Take a moment just to notice our breath, and then use the back of our body to resource and lean against our chair seat, because a lot of us may carry a lot of energy in front of our body and be constantly in this kind of fast forward moving motion. So it is nice to see if we can bring our awareness to the back of the body, of our body, and allow ourselves to feel supported, even with this just common object like mm-hmm. the back of our car seat.
Yeah. I think it's so incredible because, so first of all, I was thinking while you were talking about some stressors that we have as parents. And I think, you know,
It starts from when we get pregnant, right?
Yeah.
It starts like there are so many stressors when we are pregnant. Everything is much more enhanced because we have another being inside of us, and we're more, even the fact that we're more tired and there are changes in our bodies, just that adds or that lessens our capacity. And then when the baby is born, you know, I feel like every little time that every time that the baby cries, you're under a stress response because it's just that the natural way that your body responds, because your body needs to know that it has to do something right now, right? Whether it's to pick up the baby or feed it or soothe it or whatever it is. So it's like we're getting to that activation mode. And then when our kids grow up, I mean, there are so many times during the day that I feel personally that I'm under a stressful situation. Whether it's in the morning, you know, getting the kids out of the house to go to school, picking them up, you know, it's that transition that we talked about. You're moving from one state of being with yourself and in your own work and in your own mind, and now you suddenly have to be with your kids and attend to them, and then you're home and everything is a mess and they're fighting and it's all very, very hectic all the time. And for me, I know personally that my nervous system gets very, very triggered by loud noises. So it's very hard for me when they are very loud, or they're screaming, or they're fighting, or they're hitting. So I get very tense in because of that. And I know that's also an issue for many other parents. And then like getting them into the shower and getting them into bed, it's always like all your day is very, very stressful as a parent. And for me, because I have been doing these exercises for a few years now, it has made such a significant change in my life. And the simple practices, one of the things that I love the most, which I learned through the work of Irene Lyon, is orienting. It's such a simple practice. And it's basically just looking at your surroundings, right? And maybe you can give a word about this here, but just look at your surroundings and orient yourself to the environment and to the space that you are. And it makes you get out of your mind and from the frantic thoughts that are happening right here into the present moment. Okay, I'm right here. I'm in my room. I'm safe. Everything is okay, right? It's kind of just like very, very subtle things, or just feeling the warm water when I'm doing the dishes, because we do dishes so many times a day, and just taking that opportunity to practice and just to feel the warm water on your hands and just focus on that for 10 seconds even. Or while you're doing the dishes, just feel your feet on the floor and just feel into that for 10 seconds. It's what I love about this work is that it works like, it's like magic. You feel like you're not doing actually anything, but in time you see huge changes happen in your life. And that's why I just fell in love with it so much. And I'm just eager to learn more and more and more all the time. So I want you to talk a little bit about how we can instill that resilience in our kids as parents.
Yeah, I just want to say I loved hearing the examples you shared. They are very, very effective. They are easy to apply. And I know you have three kids, and I know you have your business, and you have a very, very hectic life. So it warms my heart to hear how you have embraced and used these intervention and this modality in your everyday life. Yeah. So with kids, Again, I am far from being an expert, and I have to say on child development, and I have to say we still do not have, at least I am not trained in any specific body of work that is specifically created and designed for kids, but I can talk about some tools that adults could use and also help their kids use when applicable these interventions. You mentioned grounding. Connecting to our feet can be very helpful. Kids go through all kinds of developmental stages. Toddlers need so much attention, and they have very alive energy. So if we can help kids notice when something is triggering, and not in a way that we don't suppress their natural healthy aggression. Their natural healthy aliveness. So sometimes they do have to act out and allow and create a space for that energy to be expressed, and then help them notice what is that they actually need while they are expressing energies that may not be always socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So being engaged in a dialogue, helping them identify their feelings, helping them identify what they actually need, again, developmentally appropriate for different phases in child's life, and then again, tools that they can use right away, connect with their body, maybe do the exercise as a family where a parent or a caregiver takes their hand and starts tapping their body, and they do it in a fun way with their child, maybe add some music, involve movement or dance. That can be one grounding practice. Then you mentioned orienting. In orienting, we are using the muscles in our neck to evoke what we called exploratory orienting. So to guide kids when they get triggered, if possible, again, developmentally appropriate, to use what we call the orienting response, to actively use these scalene muscles that are innervated in such a way to connect our gut. 80% of the communication from gut goes into the brain, because we are hardwired to notice threat in our environment, even at the neuroceptive level. So exploratory orienting is a way we signal to the brain, I'm okay, you know, I'm not in a threatening environment. And also grounding exercises I mentioned for parents, if they can start noticing and developing skills around noticing transitions in their everyday life, for kids also to start noticing if there are super hyper coming from, they were maybe playing sports somewhere, to have some kind of transition practice. Maybe they will just spend 1 minute or 2 minutes when they come home and find, for example, a wall and use their back against the wall, just to notice a sense of steadiness, groundedness, and support that comes through the wall. And then also one of a very, very helpful exercises or practices, both for kids and adults, can be one hand on the forehead and then the other hand behind our back. So basically we are holding the oldest structure in the brain, so to speak, the place where the cerebellum and reptilian brain is, and the newer structures in the brain, the prefrontal cortex, the neocortex, and just experience here a sense of containment. This comes straight from Peter's booklet, Healing Trauma, and it is available. And then another practice also from his book that can be very grounding and soothing, because what we are talking about here is to creating these micro moments in our kids' lives to introduce the opportunity for their nervous system to settle a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this practice would be a right hand goes under the left underarm on the side where our heart is. And then the left hand comes and on top of our right upper arm. And then we just notice the sense of how we are holding ourselves, the sense of holding and containment. And this could be also done as a mini family ritual. Maybe before dinner or after dinner, or when the family wants to take a moment or two to do this together. This is definitely designed to be a solo practice, but then, for example, if family members or caregivers want to do this together, then they can also use they can make eye contact to add another layer of relational component, and perhaps use what we call the elements of the social engagement system, smile at each other, notice the quality of the energy or relational field, what gets evoked when they just gaze into each other's eyes and smile. And I know this type of language is not probably suited for younger kids. I'm really now talking to ideally to your audience parents, so that they can bring these practices and introduce, if when appropriate and relevant, to their kids.
Right. So that was very helpful, first of all. I think you gave us a lot of ideas, and each person can adopt whatever speaks to them, right? Yeah. So we have different ways to do more or less, or to get more or less the same result that we want if we are actually being present in what we are doing. And also something that I've learned that is probably the most powerful thing with kids, especially with young ones that are not able yet to do these things for themselves. So actually the thing is co-regulation. And yeah. Our work as parents, the most important work that we have as parents is the ability to regulate ourselves. And when we can regulate ourselves, then we are able to co-regulate with our children, because babies are not born with the ability to regulate. So we teach them regulation by regulating ourselves and then soothing them and helping them regulate. And in time and with practice and with repetition for many, 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 many years, right? Then they will be able to develop those skills. But I think it's so beneficial. So I feel like the co-regulation aspect is something that is done many times in the moment of stress. But what we are talking about also here is what we can do between those moments, right? Like those little family rituals, noticing the transitions. I think, like, you know, what I've learned from you is that transition part is so, so important, because we tend to be so much time of our day, we're multitasking, right? We're doing a few things at a time, and we're eating while we're texting, we're eating while we're just scrolling on our phone on Facebook or whatever it is. Or we're doing the dishes while we're listening. Like, I do that a lot. Like, I do the dishes while I'm listening to an audiobook. And I've noticed that my body gets so overwhelmed with these experiences. And I'm really trying to take a step back and be present with whatever it is that I'm doing. So if I'm eating, I'm trying just to eat. And I know, like, my mind is telling me at the same time, no, you have to answer that email right now. And I'm like, okay, no, I don't have to. I can wait 2, 3, 5 minutes and finish my meal right now. And then I can go and do that. So it's also just knowing how to be present with whatever it is that we're doing, and also notice the transitions between the things that we're doing. So for me, and we talked about that when I came to you, is sometimes it's very hard for me to transition between work and picking up the kids. So in work, I'm very, very concentrated, and I have a lot of energy, like creative energy running inside of me. And then I have to change to a different mode of, you know, caretaking and seeing them, like what's going on for them. Like, I can't be in my mind when I'm with them. So kind of having that transition, like sit 1 or 2 minutes before I pick them up in my car and ground myself and orient to my environment, or do some breathing exercise, and then notice the transition. And actually, when we do it for ourselves, we understand why for kids transitions is so hard, because transitions is one of the hardest things for kids. Like, it's so hard for them to get out of the house. It's so hard for them to enter the school. It's so hard for them to get picked up from the school, to get home. Like, every change for them, it's like such a big deal. And I think, like, when we notice that for us, it's actually also a big deal, then yeah, we can understand them better and understand what they need better. The last thing that I really want you to talk about is anger, because I feel like us as parents, we have a very hard time with this. Like, we feel anger many times during the day, but we don't want to be aggressive towards our children. But then we also don't want to contain that anger inside of us, because we know that that's not healthy for our bodies. So how can we navigate that?
Yes. So in this body of work, we focus on anger as a psychobiological emotion, expression. And of course, we never advocate, or I never advocate or would propose inappropriate expressions of anger where someone else may be hurt or harmed. However, I think we as adults should try to be as mindful as possible about our own imprints around anger. What is okay, and was anger allowed in our families? Who was allowed to feel angry? Because exactly to your point is, we don't want to internalize that anger and turn it and suppress it. However, we want to be as mindful as possible so that we set some loving boundaries in our relationships, loving boundaries with our partners, our co-workers, our kids, so that we can appropriately relate when we feel triggered and when we feel anger. We often feel angry because our boundaries are violated. And if we don't know exactly, if we don't communicate in a clear, loving way and establish what works for us, kids are inherently going to challenge our boundaries because they're little bodies. They may not even be aware. They need us to role model what healthy boundaries are, and what, and that is okay to be angry, but it's not okay to act out or to try to hurt someone. And I know it's a very, very complex topic, grief, anger. I think in our society, generally speaking, anger is even a little bit more allowed in popular culture and media in comparison to grief. I think we as a culture have much more openness, if you will, to accept our anger, but not our grief. And that's definitely another topic that we could talk about at some point. So I don't know if this is helpful.
Yeah, I think it was really helpful that you said that anger, we feel anger many times, I think, as parents, because our boundaries are violated. And I think that's so important to understand that when we feel anger, it's because there is a need of ours that is not being met. It's not like we just feel anger, right? Like there is a reason for our anger. So it will be very beneficial to understand why we are getting angry. Maybe the situation is not working for us, right? Like I know for me, because I homeschooled my kids for 5 years and I was with them 24/7 all the time, my relationship with anger was a little bit tricky because I did feel anger many times, but the last thing that I wanted to do is yell at my kids or hit my kids. So for a long period of time, I would just swallow the anger inside. And I would get, you know, my back would hurt, my neck would hurt, I would be exhausted. You know, I had like gut issues. It came out in so many different ways. But what I've learned for myself that is beneficial. So first of all, it's about the boundaries, setting the boundaries. And one thing that I decided to do this year is to put my kids in, it's not exactly like a regular school, but it's a alternative education system, which I felt like that's what I needed. Like I need to take also care of my needs. And what I needed this year, at least, is to have time for myself. So that's one step that I did, which helped me heal, just feel less angry during the day. And the second thing that I have learned is when I do get angry, and of course I still get angry, is to let out that anger in a way that is not frightening for the kids. And of course, without like yelling or hitting them. So one thing, and I actually learned this also from Irene Lyon, is to take even like a towel, or there are like those long foam things that you can hold in your hand and you can squeeze them very, very, very tightly. Or you can just take a towel and just twisting the towel very, very hard and just let that anger, aggressive energy out on that object so that it's not left in my body.
Yes.
So yes. That's two things. And the third thing is roaring. And I do it with the kids. Like I tell them, I feel like I'm a lion and I need to roar right now. So I roar like that. And it's actually, it makes them laugh. And I explain to them, like, I feel like I'm in the jungle and I'm being chased by a tiger or something like that. So it's, I make it a little playful.
Mm-hmm.
And those three things have just been so beneficial for my own health, for my ability to express myself more, like better with them, and show them that aggression is okay, right? Because our aggression is actually our life force.
Yes.
And if we suppress our aggression, suppress our anger, then we're going to suppress our life force in other areas of our life. So we want to bring it up. We want to let it out, but we want to do it in a healthy way for us and for the people that are surrounding us.
Yes, absolutely. I love these examples that you provided. And I love the example of roaring like a lioness. And I'm sure that your boys are loving it. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is, again, communicating when we are angry in a way that doesn't really take away our love for our family members, kids. Being angry doesn't mean that if our boundaries are violated, it doesn't mean that we stop loving someone.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you so much, Ida. This was such an important conversation and I was looking forward to it. So if people want to connect with you, work with you, how can they find you?
Yeah, I am listed in the public directory on the Somatic Experiencing website, or they can just Google Aida Meissen and find me, or my website that is accessed through the directory, or my email, which is souldelic, souldelic at icloud.com. And I want to thank you for inviting me to be your guest. I also want to thank you for the amazing work that you do. And I want to thank you for your commitment to making this world a kinder, gentler, better place for everyone, and for bringing this body of work to people who need it so much, parents and kids.
Right. Thank you so much for these words. And I will definitely link all those links in the show notes and your email and everything so people can reach you.
Sounds good. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Ida.
What a great interview with such practical tips. Here are the main takeaways. Number one, our bodies have their own innate healing intelligence. The body carries the residue of difficult experiences, and often we don't want to feel what is inside of it. But when we do reconnect to the body, we find our way back to our source. We can activate our innate healing abilities. Number two, somatic experiencing was developed by Dr. Peter Levine. It is a modality that works with implicit memories that are stored in the body and uses interventions and tools to access the body intelligence to heal itself. Number three, resilience means to jump back or to recoil. It is the ability to regulate, settle, and recover from stressful or traumatic experience, and not to get stuck in a trauma cycle. Being resilient means being able to adapt, adjust, and recover quickly. Number four, self-care is about finding opportunities in our day-to-day life to connect back to ourselves, even if it's only for a few minutes. Number five, we are not seeking to live in a world where we don't get triggered or where our kids don't have challenges. We want to learn how to have capacity to deal with life challenges and not to get thrown off every time we experience a stressful situation. Number six, Noticing our breath is one of the most effective ways to connect to our inner experience. We can calm our nervous system by making our exhale a bit longer than our inhale. Number 7. When our kids are triggered, we can guide them to notice their trigger without suppressing their natural healthy aggression. Allow that energy to be expressed. Help them notice what they actually need. Being engaged in a dialogue, helping them identify their feelings and help them reconnect to their bodies in various ways. If we are able to regulate ourselves, we can help our kids regulate through the process of co-regulation. Number 9. When we feel anger, it is often because our boundaries have been violated. We want to communicate and model healthy boundary setting for our kids. Number 10. We want to learn what our imprint around anger is, how we learn to handle anger growing up, become aware of our automatic responses, and learn to deal with anger in a way that won't suppress it, and communicate that when we are angry, that doesn't take our love for our loved ones. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll talk to you again next time. Bye for now. I hope you enjoyed this episode and was inspired to make small shifts in your parenting that will support your kids to bring forth their full potential while living a life of ease and well-being. To support this show, please make sure to subscribe and rate the show. Leaving a comment can be very helpful in promoting the show on the podcast platform. If you think that this can benefit other parents, please share this podcast with them. I invite you also to follow my Instagram account, Alternative Parenting Coach, and join my private Facebook group, Alternative Parenting, where I would love to hear your thoughts about the episode, what you learned, what inspired you, or what you didn't agree with. Your feedback is extremely valuable to me, as we are all in this process together, living, learning, and evolving. Thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.